Hello everyone and welcome to the Still Parents Podcast recap episode, taking a quick look back at our recent episodes 46 through to 50. Episode 46 was the first of two recent appearances on the podcast for Roy Presswich after he and his wife Mim dealt with two separate losses in the space of a year.
Lenny was delivered shortly after that, but he wasn't breathing. And we kind of knew that lots of babies may have a certain amount of meconium aspiration and they need a bit of resuscitation.
Yeah.
And we thought, I kind of thought, oh, well, they'll give him a shake and a rub and a bit of oxygen and stuff and he'll come around.
Yeah.
He was lay on the sort of resuscitation table next to Mim and I was on the other side of the bed. They trying to resuscitate him and it just kept going on and on and on. And it was like, shit.
Yeah.
This is really bad. This is not good. And I've worked in a hospital before. I used to work as a healthcare assistant years and years ago.
Right.
So I know the sounds and they called the arrest call at some point and I just thought, oh shit, this is bad. This is really bad.
Ignorance is bliss, isn't it, Roy?
Yeah. And then like everything started to come crushing down and I was like, I kept looking at the clock. And from like a sort of, I'm knowing that 20 minutes has passed and he's not taken a breath yet. And I'm thinking, oh no, like, this is horrible. No person should be in this position. And then the anaesthetist who was trying to resuscitate Lenny turned around to me and I'll never, ever forget that face. He turned around to me and he said, I'm really sorry, there's nothing more we can do. And like I was like, everything's broken. Like what?
It's interesting what you said about the look in the person's eyes. Because I had that with Callie when we lost Callie. I'll take that look with me forever. Because neither me or Crystal were there for Callie's birth. But when the doctor came into the room, she has to deliver the news. But how do you deliver that news to another human being, really, right? You know, I know they're professionals, but they're also human, right? And I could tell, you know, as you said there, you can just tell, you know, you can tell with the look, with the body language, that something ain't right here, you know. And
And this is going to sound like a really ignorant question, but this is for all of you. Do you believe it? You know that moment, like you've just been describing.
Oh. That's a good question, Dan. I didn't, and I still didn't believe it. I mean, ours was slightly different, Roy, in the respect that we found out on a Friday that Lily's heart had stopped just shy of 37 weeks and were sent home on the Friday evening and then had to go back into hospital on the Sunday, and Amy gave birth to Lily then. And even when Amy was giving birth and was in labour and was under every drug, any drug that she wanted, because there was going to be no effect or anything like that on the baby. Mm. Even when Lily was born, you still expected a cry.
Yeah.
You still expect it because that's...
Maybe they've got it wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking, it's all going to be fine. They've got it wrong.
Ending,
it's absolutely.
It's like a movie, you know.
And it was just... Boy, it was silent. It was a... tried to explain it in the past, it was like a deafening silence.
And that's the point, right?
Deafening silence. And it's deaf. And what I mean by that is that it's almost like you've got so much going on inside your own head and your own awareness of what's going on in that room. And you just look around and everything visually is screaming at you. And it's almost like this big car crash, this massive explosion of emotion and everything.
But senses are
nobody's
all over
saying
the place,
anything. Yeah. Do you know the only way you can sort of explain it in that respect is if you put something in your mouth that is like quite strong in taste or something and you just get like a burst of
like
flavour and
spice or a spice or something,
something like that.
Yeah,
this is what it was like
but mentally.
Silence and mentally and visually and everything. And it was just deafening, absolutely deafening. in just so many ways. It was just, yeah, it was horrific.
Thank you for sharing that, Roy, because we can see, or you know, that's not an easy thing to kind of tell back, right? You know,
no, it's not. And I've told a lot of people the story, and like, I don't mind sharing the story, but it's just, I think for anybody, it's just heartbreaking. It's just a tragic story, but it's part of my story and it's part of Lenny's story.
Absolutely.
And that's really important to me. So thanks for listening to it.
James Gibney was our guest on episode 47, where he stressed the importance of hearing people use their baby's name.
You just got to say the baby's name. Yeah. Simple as that.
Well, how do you feel when you hear Edward's name?
Love it. Absolutely great. To the point where it's quite difficult sometimes. A lot of the close family, even in Christmas cards that we give to the kids, it's got his name in.
Yeah.
So then other people, when they give you a card for Christmas and then they don't put his name in,
yeah,
he's part of the family.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, you want people to remember him. And I said, it hurts a little bit when people don't.
Yeah, let's look at it like this. 13 years, 6 years, 18 months, we're all saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And we've always said the same thing. And everybody who comes on says the same thing, and that is say the name.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just a baby.
Yeah.
This is my son or my daughter, you know. And if there's something that people are listening to now who have come across this podcast for the first time, or they're listening this evening or something like that, is literally the one thing that bereaved parents want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say the name.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know what to say, it can be something like thinking of you after, you know, losing Edward, losing for this lad today on Twitter, Dexter. You know, it's just so important.
Yeah.
It's soulless otherwise. It's
a great point.
I think this is where the education side comes in around the whole subject, is that what Ryan was saying about the Twitter feedback this morning, you know, this is where people need to be educated as far as, as we said, they're our children. There always will be our children. Yeah. You know,
I've got to say, in terms of like with my job, again, I've been absolutely brilliant. However, there's still certain people that would avoid you if you sat in the canteen, or certain people that don't know what to say.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unfortunately, there's some people that find it more comfortable. I went into work and was quite open about, I wanted people to ask me questions and to be able to discuss Edward and the situation and what we've been through.
How long were you off work for, and how? What was it like doing what you do, going back while you're dealing with grief?
Yeah, so I sort of was quite open to say what I felt comfortable doing and what I felt able to cope with. And in terms of any time that I needed off, I think it was a couple of, it was about 8 weeks. 8 to 12 weeks I was off work, and then slowly phased return into work. And then
did you feel ready? Did you want to go back? Because the reason why I'm asking is we had a couple of guests on who, I think it was one of our earlier episodes, didn't want to be off at all because he just threw himself into the job, and then it hit him at a later hard.
So again, I quite like having a routine. If I hadn't have gone back to work, I think I would have found it quite difficult to go back to work at all. So it's getting back into that routine. Yeah. Having to get out of bed to go to work, obviously having the girls, having to take them to school, having to do that sort of stuff. So it still gives you that structure that you can't just stay in bed and not have to get out.
Looking back now, that's what I found. Not, you know, because obviously we've gone on to have Etta now, and those times that where I am feeling down or feeling kind of having a moment or whatever, Etta's there.
Yeah,
and that makes it, that softens the blow a little bit. And then, you know, she's 5 now, so she's at that stage where she's just funny, and she doesn't realise she's funny, but she is. Well, she does realise she's funny. But she takes away that little bit of pain and a little bit of, you know, and I'm sure that's what happened with you.
The difficulty was that the girls obviously expected us to, because they went to bed on the 28th and they were asleep. So they were older, so they obviously.
So it's Ruby and Betsy, is it? So 13 and 8 now. So it's 11 and 6, I guess, around the time,
So they sort of were expecting us or them to come into hospital the next day to come and visit their little brother. So it was like speaking to them or on sort of FaceTime and stuff at the hospital, and them saying, can we see him? Can we see him?
Mm.
And having to make that decision then to tell them.
Did you tell them? Was it?
It was via like a FaceTime sort of call, and to say like, I'm really sorry, but yeah, but that like that. All, I think of all the things, that was one of the things that was the most difficult, and still haunts me in that respect now, because just seeing their faces go from sheer happiness to like, can we see him? Can we see him? And then just
how long were you on the call for after that? Like with it,
Probably not too long. No, to be honest. Yeah, just... but, and my mum was with them.
Yeah,
the girls at the time, and it was making the decision while we were in hospital whether or not they were going to come in to see him.
Right.
But we agreed at the time that managing our emotions and their emotions in the hospital probably wouldn't have been the easiest thing to have done.
And it's whatever feels right for... with a bit of hindsight, not that it really makes any difference, but how do you feel about that now?
So subsequently, after Edward came back following the PM, and he was buried in Cornwall. Edward's buried in Cornwall. Yeah. So
it's where you're originally from, is that right?
That's correct, So we made the decision that my dad and I went to the hospital and picked Edward up and transported him to Cornwall.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
We went in to the hospital, and obviously then I lifted him out and put him into the casket.
You drove down
with him? And then we drove down to Cornwall with him in the car. Cornwall's a special place for us. And wanted to spend that time with him, taking him to Cornwall, and not for him not to be on his own. So we went to Cornwall, to the Chapel of Rest in Cornwall. It was sort of spur of the moment. The girls came with us to the Chapel of Rest, and then they saw him in the Chapel of Rest. So they did get to meet him. And so we have photographs with him together and stuff like that. And
how ultimately, and still bearing in mind it's, 18 months ago, nearly 2 years, are your daughters, how are they with it? And
I think
obviously being the ages that they're at.
I think the eldest, going through the teenage years now, it's not sort of, maybe not as open or doesn't talk about stuff as much. The schools have been really good. In terms of offering support and stuff. And with the youngest, she'll talks about Edward all the time and quite open and ask questions. And
you as the parents, you've got to, especially when they were younger, maybe for your youngest, you've got to verbalise it in a way that you do to a child, and you don't use the same vernacular, do you? And it's difficult.
Yeah, so when we came out of hospital and left Edward on New Year's Eve and went back to the girls, we sort of each wrote a letter or a poem to say what we wanted to say to him. And then on New Year's Eve went up to a hillside again.
Same one?
Yeah. And watched fireworks for New Year's, and then read what we'd written to him. So sort of include him and part of the family. And again, it was just
a nice moment.
It was really, really as nice as it can be at that moment in time.
Yeah, say nice, but yeah.
Connor O'Sullivan joined us on episode 48 after he and wife Lauren lost their baby Evie shortly after she was born in April 22.
This has been going on for over 24 hours. It sounds like you're on your third sort of staff change, and you finally get a midwife comes through and
possibly starts picking up on something.
What conversations were you, if you can recall, you and Lauren having at this point?
Like, we're very open with each other with how we're feeling, and we always have been. But we also both, we're both very anxious people anyway.
Right.
So it was kind of like we didn't really, even throughout the night, because we were kind of reassured by other nurses and midwives, we didn't really think that anything was going to be massively wrong. Or we just kind of thought, get through the night, get her home with us and with her grandparents who we live with, and we'll go from there and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But then obviously when the nurse started to pick up on that and then she was taken away, it was a lot of reassuring from both of us just saying it's going to be okay. Like, we didn't know, I didn't know the extent of any problems. I just thought they were having problems with the machine at first.
Yeah.
I think when they put her on that machine, they said that she needed to be on oxygen just because she wasn't getting enough to her. And then she was like transported down to the NICU without an incubator, so she wasn't given the oxygen when she was being transported down there. And then she was eventually down there, a doctor come to see us after we had been down to see her for a few hours. Like, time was passing, it was just so much of a blur. The doctor kind of just explained to us that she's got an infection, she might be in there for like a couple of days, so
So it doesn't seem like anything terrible. She might be in there for a little bit longer if the infection has spread. But
so although things aren't ideal, you know, it's the last thing that you want to hear. You know, you've just your wife's just given birth and you're hearing about infections or colic, but nothing at all. These are pretty, you know, run of the mill things that babies will have not long after birth.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's kind of how I was feeling. I thought,
I can deal with
her being in there for 2 days. We'll come and see her when we can.
So you mentally prepare for that, don't you? Then you have this sudden jump from that, from colic or an infection to tragedy.
Yeah. We spoke to Lauren's mum and she came to see us. So we went outside while Evie was just in with the doctors in the incubator, and everything was kind of just, we hadn't heard from them since they initially said that. Mm. So we just had a bit of time outside with our mum. It was kind of like we all didn't really know the severity of it, but we seemed, what I remember, we were all okay. It was kind of just all reassuring each other. Yeah. And then by the time we got back upstairs, me and Lauren, after I was pushing her in a wheelchair because she still didn't have full use of her legs properly.
Yeah.
By the time we got back through the door upstairs, we walked in, and as we were sitting down, the doctor came in to see us and was kind of just saying, this was around, I think about 12:30. He just said that she had deteriorated, that they were going to try and get in touch with another hospital because they didn't know if they had the capacity to deal with it there. And that they were also, I know he said it, that was something that he said earlier, sorry. But yeah, he just basically said that she had deteriorated, and that from then on, it was kind of like we both gave each other that look. And I think Lauren even said to me that she kind of just knew then.
Oh, right.
It wasn't going to be good. And then we eventually went down there to the NICU, and they were constantly trying to resuscitate her. And a couple of times it worked, and they were trying to give her bloods and stuff.
Yeah.
But eventually at around, around like 20 past one, I think, around that kind of time, they asked for permission to stop trying because nothing was working. And they said that the amount of times that they had had to resuscitate her, that the damage that she's been through would have been hard enough.
Wow. It's like a dagger, isn't it? It's where we can all relate in the sense of, even though we say this all the time, that all stories are different around this subject, we're all connected by that loss. And you know, you're part of a new world, which you didn't think you were going to be part of.
Exactly, yeah.
How are you now?
I'm good now. I mean, obviously, I have my down days, and there are some things that I don't think I'll ever be able to get over, so to speak, but I'm happy with where I am. We got married since.
Okay. Congratulations.
So we've done a lot of stuff, I think.
Yeah.
When we was still in the hospital, we stayed a few nights with Evie after she passed in a cold cot.
Yeah.
And one of the things that me and Lauren said to each other, we must have said it about 100 times while we was in there, was one that we have to continue her legacy on, which we've been trying to do so much. And two, that we have to be really open with each other on how we're feeling, and we have to help each other by helping ourselves.
After the loss of your child, when do you have that conversation about trying again? This is one of the things that Gareth Haycock talked to us about when he joined us on episode 49.
I don't know, it was weird. Kind of give us some, even, it was scary, you know, but it's like, if you don't do it now, will you have the guts to do it in a year's time or 2 years' time?
And
obviously, a woman's got a biological clock, so it was like, just let's go for it if it's meant to be. And
the twins, are they boy, girl, or boy, boy, girl, girl?
Identical boys.
Oh. Okay. So I hope you don't mind me asking you this question. I know it can be quite a tough question as well. How did you find that next pregnancy and then knowing that they were boys rather than a girl?
You're happy with whatever child, as long as they're healthy and that, but no, another girl couldn't replace her.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
You don't feel like she's being replaced by another girl, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
she's got two brothers.
Yeah, absolutely. And how were your other children
following obviously Poppy's death?
Like, my daughter's just turned 16.
Okay.
So obviously that age, they don't open up much to the lights and phones. But the little boy, you were only two at the time, and he kind of invested in it. I remember the Friday, because he went up to Claire's belly. I'm like, Poppy, come on, wake up, you know. And he kind of, he knew what were happening and he knew what were coming. Yeah, so it was tough. So with the boys, we kind of kept it to a minimum of people knowing. We just didn't want to put people through it all again if worse were to happen and stuff like that. So.
We did that. I'm interested to hear what Gareth says on this as well, because I think it was we'd shared Callie on social media and friends, and once we'd found out she was our first, so we're, you know, buzzing, and we want everyone, you know, you want the world to know, right? You want, you know, the fact that you've got a kid on the way. But this time Crystal wanted to keep it away from kind of social media, as you said, and kind of not telling as many people as we needed to, and I think it was part of a protection for us. I think once you've been through it once, unfortunately, you can't. We've said before, it takes the naivety away.
I was about to come exactly onto that. Yeah, because it's something that you've mentioned, isn't it? It takes that naivety.
So I'm very interested to see, was it a conscious decision then, Gareth, to kind of just tell only a certain people, I guess, about this pregnancy after Poppy?
Yeah, the circle who did get told, you know, very small. My wife even come off social media just, you know, to be away from things.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
So I think she might have been on it to start with, but once she got past first trimester, she just, like, come away from it all just to stay away.
Doesn't that show how powerful social media is as well? Like, how psychological it can be, and, you know, and how it can really affect you, like, every, on a day-to-day level, without you realising.
And this is for us now, who remember, you know, what it's like pre-social media era. Imagine what it will be like in another generation or two, when it's I mean, it's pretty much every fibre of everyone's fabric anyway, daily. Something which Matt and Ryan have mentioned before, and previous guests, and it's coming back onto when you found out that you guys were expecting, you're having the twins, and you still want to enjoy the pregnancy, but were you able to after what you'd been through a few months earlier?
No, not really, no. And obviously, we've been told as twins, it were like...
Yeah, the added,
you know,
risks with that as well.
An high-risk pregnancy, you know.
Yeah.
That's the last thing you want to be told after going through what you've gone through. And, you know, you have a few little I had mixed emotions, like, well, is it two chances to get one, you know, initially when you're told? But then as the pregnancy's going, you're like, it's all or nothing, you know. You don't want to be walking the way we want out to. You definitely want your two, and it were awful. It couldn't have been any worse after what you...
When you first found out it was twins, and obviously, you know, you have that, you're happy and you're full of joy and you've got them, but there's that, just, you know, in that first instant, we're like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Well, about 3 years ago, my sister, she's kind of a bit spiritualist and that, and she's always said, I've visioned you having twin boys, Gaz.
No way.
It happens, so like.
Bet she's well happy about that.
Can
now.
She tell me the lottery numbers?
Yeah. Questions just actually come up on the live stream, Gareth. And the question, it's from Jack Taylor. We had Jack on a few weeks ago, and he's been on a couple of times.
And
he's asked, when people who don't know you ask how many children you have, what do you say? And do you find people don't know what to say if you... Well, actually, I suppose that's that second part is leading on to potentially what your answer would be. So I suppose the first question is, what do you say when people say, how many children do you have?
Yeah, I said five, but I know what you mean. Sometimes, if you read the four, you say five. They'll be like, well, where's... You know what I mean? So it's like Claire, when we were going to, you know, scans and stuff, oh, is this your first? And, she'd always look to me, is like, what do I say? And it's like, no, it's not. You don't need to tell them why, you know, or what's happened, but just, it's not your first. You are a mum already. So, but I remember being asked by a friend, and he's like, oh, how's your family? And, you know, I'm like, well, apart from missing one, yeah, I suppose we're all right. Yeah, but you still got two, ain't you?
There we go. There's the
yeah.
What's your response to that, Gareth? Just out of interest, is it? Do you?
It's such a weird thing for someone. I can't get my head around why someone would think that was all right to say. I don't get it.
But I think people say things like that because they, we've said people don't like being put into a position where they feel awkward. And I think people just genuinely say it because they don't want the awkward silence of not knowing what to say. How do you respond to that though, Gareth?
The F word I should have
effing
free, not
two. It's an adult show. Feel free if you want to say the word, you can do it. It's fine.
But it is. It's true, though, isn't it?
I think. I suppose they think they're probably replying with a positive. Well, you have got to, you know. We aren't properly thinking what they have just said, but. Yeah.
And I'm sure it's coming from a good place, isn't it? That's why they're your friends in the first place. It's just knowing the right way and how and when.
I've said to people in the past, when I'll never forget, there was a teacher who said to me, oh, well, at least you've still got Alfie. Yeah. And I knew they'd got kids. And I just went, okay, so which one will you fucking give up then?
Yeah, you've said that a lot.
As if to say, okay, I've got Alfie, great. But that doesn't mean that,
when Gareth mentioned that,
it's not like an episode of Bullseye where here's what you could have won.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Because it's not like that, but the way people do talk to you sometimes is like, I'll never forget.
But
I've
known you a long time, and Ryan's always said that response, and that's always it's always hit me when you said that the first time, and I thought, you know what, it's a brilliant point.
It is. You've mentioned it on this show when Gareth mentioned that was the reference point I was trying to go back to into my head because you mentioned this way back in the early days.
Which one would you give up?
I don't know what sort of question that is. But again, where has that come from? How did that person feel when they said it? It's like, oh shit, hang on. That's a bit stupid on me.
Listen, I'm not throwing people out. No. I'm not throwing people under the bus.
It's a conversation,
like
isn't
that.
It?
That's
conversation, what we're here for.
And I'm not going to throw people under the bus that I know and that are close to me and so forth. But I've had people that are close to me say it. Mm. And again, I've used exactly the same response and haven't been able to get an answer. Mm. Because ultimately, there is no answer
to it. Yeah, you're right.
And it is. It does then put them back. You're throwing the ball straight back into their half of the court and saying to yourself, and saying to them in a different sort of ways, engage before you open your mouth.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
And finally, for this recap, episode 50, where Ryan, Matt and myself talked about the journey so far and reaching a landmark episode. So 50 episodes, gentlemen.
Massive.
Huge.
We started this at the end of... Matt's going to correct me, so Matt's just... You might as well just say it.
2020.
The end of 2020.
November, wasn't it?
November
2020.
It was when we were put into
the second lockdown.
The second lockdown, weren't it?
Yeah, so COVID was still a thing.
It was.
Second lockdown in the UK was just underway. And Ryan had mentioned about the idea of doing a podcast for a little while. So we thought, there is no time like the present. Let's just get it done. And we started, and we were all... In fact, at this point, I still hadn't actually met Matt.
No, you hadn't, actually. No.
Well, surely I'd met...
Nope. We were all there in our living rooms, in our various rooms, on Zoom without any microphones. And
there were six of us that night.
There was six,
Yeah.
And we started just to do this as a 6-episode run to give men a platform to talk and also to listen. In fact, while we're here, would you like to listen to a little clip back from our first ever episode?
This is going to sound horrendous, isn't it?
So here we go. This is how we started things off just over 2 years ago.
Good evening, everyone. It's great to have you watching us live for our first podcast. So it's exciting. It's something which we've wanted to do for a while. One thing that we wanted to do in 2020 until that little virus called COVID came around was to try and do lots of support for men and highlighting that men suffer baby loss too and can quite often get forgotten in the grand scheme of things. So one of the things we wanted to do this year was to really support men.
How does that make you feel hearing that back? Because I don't think you've heard that before.
I did an tally there and I counted 15 erms.
Yeah.
Really?
Listen, I've got history with this, haven't I? Because they used to
do
OK tallies on me when I was teaching. Course, yeah. So, like, I immediately go for the things which I think, oh, that is cringy. But to think about where we've come from to where we are now is absolutely, it's quite frightening to think that the need for this podcast is greater now than it ever has been.
Yeah, good point.
Because obviously the viewing figures, the numbers of people listening.
Yeah.
The people who want to come on.
Absolutely, both nationally and internationally as well. I don't think we, personally, I don't think I ever set out thinking that
we didn't anticipate
we'd be as big as we are now.
We've always said, haven't we, it's one of those things because it's difficult because we want people to listen, but we don't want people to listen. Because if you are, it means that you're in pain or you know somebody that has lost and you're looking to support them. One thing I've learned as well over the last couple of years is because I guess for me, I'm coming in and I'm doing this and I'll just go home and start editing it. For you two, you're having... Every episode that we do, you're sort of reliving your pain that you've gone through and filling in people as well on bits of your journey. And you're doing it week in, week out. Mm. How do you feel about doing this podcast in relation to that? Has it helped you in any way?
I'll be honest,
what I'm getting at is I'm sure there might have been some weeks when you haven't gone, I don't want to do it today.
I think, well, as you know, and you said, many times and it's interesting and rightly so that I've barely listened to an episode.
Yeah.
And I think that's a subconscious thing for me, but also obviously part of it. So I,
is it because at the start it's difficult enough talking about it, but then to go back and hear yourself and I know people who don't speak for a living, they quite often people don't like the sound of their own voices. And I always say, well, that's how you sound to every other person on the planet. You're the only one who hears it different.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I think the big thing that stuck out for me is that I feel the reason it's gone so well is we've kept it simple. We haven't tried to complicate it. We haven't tried to...
Because you've got a simple host, that's why.
But lovable.
See, that should be my Twitter bio.
But, yeah.
Simplehost.com.
Yeah. I think we've got exactly... the right feel for it.
It'd be weird to do this with, like some big glitzy, because it's a serious thing, isn't it? And the most important part is the words that are coming out your mouths. And I think for us personally, the journey that we've gone on from doing that on Zoom to renting a studio to Ryan just going, oh, do you know what? I'm going to build a studio. And 24 hours later, he built a studio, pretty much.
Yeah, Ryan lived here for the whole of the summer last year.
And it really impressed me because I think you're both brilliant, very proactive, especially with everything that's gone on in your lives. And when you get the bit between your teeth about something, you just go and do it. And I've found that quite inspiring personally. It's, just to self-indulge for a minute. It's very hard for me to go home in a bad mood when after I've spent time with you guys, because it just makes me go, come on, Dan, it's like, I can't, after everything you guys have gone through and seeing the way that you deal and handle life, and it's important that you know how big a thing that is.
But I think that's what the loss does. And I think, the fact that Ryan did last summer decide to just build the podcast studio, I think that's the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The loss means you can do whatever you want and actually... you can get through anything because life, unfortunately, has thrown the worst thing at you that can ever happen, right?
Do you know what, though? Some people, and I'm going to throw a spanner in the works here, some people, and we've spoken about it, might say, oh, it's a distraction.
Well, yeah. Well, I suppose it is.
Because it's what men do, isn't it? Yeah. We do things because then we don't have to think about other things. Yeah. And this wasn't built, the studio wasn't built with me using it as a distraction. It was built because we genuinely needed our own studio and we wanted to get our own studio and stuff. But
the true story is we felt a bit embarrassed at the old studio thanks to Mill Street and Leamington Spa, because the amount of times we had to phone up the engineer just to come in and help us out, and she'd always come in and go, you see that button there? It says on.
Yeah, we did feel a bit stupid on that night, didn't we, to be fair?
Going back to what you just said, Matt, I think you listen to it a bit more now, don't you? And I know Crystal started listening to bits and bobs of the show.
Yeah. Crystal listens to it more than I do.
Does she review you?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. She says many times that she could do a better job, but no, I see it as a podcast, but I don't even notice the microphone now.
Yeah.
I just see it as we're just talking.
Mm.
You know, I that's how I see it. Well, you know,
yeah,
I,
that's good.
You know, I see it as I would talk like this with Ryan in the office.
That's how we want it.
And
yeah.
Yeah, and then
is Ryan on his phone when you're trying to talk to him in the office?
Do you know?
He spent the last 10 minutes just staring at.
No, do you know what? I am listening to absolutely everything you're saying. Do you
he's
know
very,
what
he's
it
very,
is?
To be fair, he's very good at that.
But so yeah, Matt, you're saying so. Listening back to it now, do you how do you feel when you are you more comfortable with it? Because obviously, it's not only the podcast, but more time has passed. I mean, is it 8 years? Nearly eight? Will it be eight?
Seven
it,
this year.
Will it? It will be seven this year
since Cali passed.
Right.
Yeah.
In June.
Yeah.
Have you listened to it together?
You're no. Crystal.
I've listened to Crystal's one, I must say.
Yeah.
Because that helped me reflect on our relationship.
I really
well.
Enjoyed that episode because it was mostly from the relationship dynamics and the way you were so honest and open, the pair of you. On that episode number 44, the link's in here. How did you find that when Amy, your wife, came on, Ryan? Because that was just around about a year, just over a year ago as well.
I agree with Matt. I think it's nice to be able to see the dynamics, but also to sort of see what they think of you and what your grief journey is, but from somebody else's eyes.
Point.
And the experience, obviously, that she has been my wife and seeing how I have been.
Mm.
Because I think sometimes we don't usually look at ourselves in that way and evaluate our journeys as we do because we're living it on a daily basis, aren't we? So it's nice to be able to hear it from the other side.
It's almost like you're getting off the hamster wheel a bit just to have a look at your own existence within what you're doing and providing for other people as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Well, it's interesting because Crystal said something in our episode that I'd never heard her say about our journey and like...
What was that? You know,
when she said about me being her carer and the fact that she'd reflected on the last 6 months of our relationship about how much she'd asked of me during the period of grief and what has happened. And, you know, I did it, obviously, because Ryan does that because you're their husband, right?
But, it's unconditional, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? but to hear her say that was big for me.
Yeah.
It was big because I thought, you know what? It means that what I did do, and I knew she probably appreciated it, but it was nice to hear her say that, I guess, you know. So it was good. It was good. I enjoyed it. And I feel taking us on to a big point that we have with this podcast, I really listened back to it and it was really nice to listen to because I felt like it was really, we had a laugh on it. It was a real kind of... There was a lot of humour through the podcast.
Which is important, I think, especially with the relationship dynamics. I remember in particular asking you guys about the first time, and we asked the guests this, the first time that you do remember laughing after, you know, after your loss. And
I think that's our real, I really believe that's our unique selling point of this podcast, and we know the appropriate moment when to bring that humour into it.
So that brings to a close this recap episode. Thanks to each and every one of our guests who've come on. If you are, we always say this, we love that you're listening, but we hate that you have to listen because of the situation that you find yourself in or because a friend of yours finds themselves in. If you would like to come on the show, you can join us for as long as you like. It could be the whole episode until you get bored of us or just 5 minutes. Then get in touch through our website, stillparentspodcast.co.uk. You can find us on Instagram, stillparentspodcast, and it's all for the Lily May Foundation. Take care, everybody, and we'll be back very soon.